Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is The Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rebay. Instigators, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger.
He's no secret. It's not secret agent. It's super agent. Get the lyrics right. Steve Bartlett joining us on The Instigators. And we'll ask him right now, what's a commission on a Patrick Mahomes contract these days, Steve?
Well, my calculator doesn't have that many digits. I don't know. I can just dream.
I mean,
I could just dream I'd be in my oceanfront home in Hawaii and all would be good.
Steve Bartlett of the Bartlett Group out of Rochester, National Hockey League agent for many, many years, no stranger to the show, my former agent, proud to call you a friend, joins myself and Marty Biron. Craig Rivet's off, so he's got an agent's schedule, Steve, right now. But let me ask you this.
Careful.
Do football agents and hockey agents, do all agents in all, and I don't know this answer, so I it's a great day to ask it. Do they all take the same commission? Is it all 3%? Like, you know, hockey's pretty standard for 3%, but what, yeah. Are football and baseball the same?
I don't know 100% for sure, but I think generally, yes, in that same vicinity. I know there's some in hockey that are as high as 5, and I've heard that in football as well. I think football actually puts a cap on it, mandated by the Players Association, whereas hockey, it tends to just be more market conditions. So I think it's capped at 5, and I don't know how many people go to that cap and how many don't. But either way, even if it's 0.5%, I think Mahomes' agent's probably got a smile on his face today. So.
No, absolutely, Steve. Let me ask you a question, because the CBA and the memorandum of understanding is underway. Now, players are going to have to return some money because of escrow to the owners over the next few years, and the escrow is going to be capped. How does that work for agents? Because obviously now players have had to pay more escrow, and you guys, put your invoice out to players. Do you, unfortunately, I would assume, have to return some of the money to the players?
Oh, God, you're killing me. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the way that we do it traditionally, Marty, is that we never bill a player until the money's actually been received. So under normal circumstances in recent years since the escrow has been in place, what happens is, we get to the end of the season, we know exactly how much the player has made, then we subtract the escrow withholding, whatever percentage that was for the season just passed, and then we bill them for their salary minus the escrow. So we never collect, we have never collected on escrow so that we have to give it back. It's more the other way around, where until the player physically has that money in their account and we know that, that there's no chance they're going to have to pay anything back. So, you know, for instance, if we're getting paid on $1 million contract and the escrow that year is 10%, then we're only going to get, you know, paid our percentage on 900, not on $1 million. So in this case, it's a, you know, we even had to do a second calculation this year because the players did not get their final paycheck. So we, when we did our billing here just in the last few weeks to our players, we would have subtracted the escrow as normal, which was withheld during the year. Then we subtracted the final paycheck, which also reduced their income and our income. But, you know, our fortunes have always been tied to the players, whether it's a lockout, whether it's, you know, anything. We never charge money for money they don't have, and we don't want to obviously get in a situation where we feel like, you know, we're taking advantage of the player. We're very, very conscious of being right and ethical and making sure that they're not paying us for anything that, that we're not entitled to.
Steve Bartlett, hockey agent out of Rochester with the Bartlett Group, joins the Instigators right now with myself and Marty Biron. Steve, what, I mean, I guess, are you, number one, are you surprised that a CBA has, you know, kind of been agreed upon? I mean, it hasn't been ratified yet, but been agreed upon. And to follow up on that, what kind of questions are players asking? What are some concerns that we are hearing, if any?
Well, I'm not surprised because from, I guess, the very early days of discussion of return to play, I think one of the prerequisites or one of the conditions that the players made very clear to ownership was, and maybe both ways, maybe that's, it's fair to say both ways, that, you know, we're in unusual times and we don't want to go into next, you know, next season or the next couple seasons with a lot of labor uncertainty. And frankly, the number one hot point for players ever since the last CBA has been this escrow issue. And now with the obvious loss of revenue for the league, you know, I think players were saying, hey, we could be looking at a, you know, 40% escrow or 45% escrow. $1 million contract might be worth $450,000. And as I always say about professional athletes, I realize the fans are not exactly getting out their violins for the guys when, you know, many of the people listening today are out of jobs or have been drastically affected with their income. So again, I'm not belittling that, but I'm just saying the players wanted to have a little bit more certainty going into the next few years, what would happen. And I think probably the biggest single driving factor to this new deal from the player side was some limit, some capping of the escrow so that, you know, they knew they weren't going to get absolutely killed. And I think there's a hope from the league standpoint that the new TV contract will add a lot of revenue. So I think the timing, you know, it kind of forced the parties together, and I think it was the right move, and hopefully the players will feel so and when they go to ratify it.
One question I have for you, and maybe that affects agents, that affects teams, and it will affect the Buffalo. So now it's been said that the cap will stay flat at $81.5 million until the revenues across the National Hockey League get back to the level as to which they were supposed to be this year. And by helping teams, there's going to be a 10% of their salary that's going to be deferred. Now, does that mean that a player like Jack Eichel, who has a $10 million cap hit, because of the 10% deferral next year, will only have a $9 million cap hit? And is that a way to help team fit more players under the cap?
That's a very good question, Marty. Part of the problem for all of us, agents included, and I talked to a couple GMs today, is other than a very tight circle, I don't think anyone has actually seen the full memorandum of understanding. And that's a great question on your part, because I honestly don't know the answer. It would seem to make sense to me that if the money's being deferred, that it would give relief to the cap, particularly when the cap is frozen. But I honestly do not have the answer to that question in terms of whether or not that will adjust as a cap situation. So obviously, you know, a Jack Eichel will have the 10% deferral. It's, again, it's not giving back. It's a deferral. It's not a reduction. It'll get paid sometime in the future. But on top of that, whatever the escrow amount, which I believe could be as high as 20% next year. So it could be the 10% deferral plus the 20%, escrow amount. So again, a $10 million contract could, you know, end up being closer to $7 million. Again, I don't expect people to be pulling out handkerchiefs right now and crying for Jack or anybody else at that level. But that's the reality of how it could play out.
Yeah, it does show its significance, though. Instigators, that's Steve Bartlett joining us here with Bartlett Hockey out of Rochester. What about the do you like the cautious approach to how they're projecting the cap moving forward and HRR and projecting the revenues, I should say, by obviously looking at the season that just was, but then also past seasons to kind of gauge the growth instead of just jumping right into it?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, again, the escrow being the sore spot that it has, one of the crazy parts of it, sometimes through arguments over, you know, what should be included in the revenues, it was often 2 years after the end of a season that the escrow was finally agreed upon and players got whatever refund, which didn't usually end up being more than a couple percent back. But still, to wait 2 years, in essence, to get that calculation always seemed a little crazy. So I think the system going forward that they're putting in place gives a little bit more escrow certainty and not a case of where necessarily 2 years go by waiting to agree on refunds or rebates back to the players or to be able to reduce escrow down to a level which is now capped. So I think there's, you know, like I said, nothing is perfect in a CBA. There's give and take both sides, but I certainly see things in this current environment that I, as a player, would see as a positive for sure.
So now this is all about the CBA. What about the return to play protocol? What is the biggest thing that stands out to you when you consider and you advise your clients regard to the bubble, to the playoff share, to everything that has to do with the return to play? What's the biggest thing that stands out to you?
Well, I think every individual is different. And again, I don't think you can lump everybody together. You may have, you know, 7 out of 10 guys that are excited to get back and get playing. And you may have 3 out of 10 that have families or other concerns with the virus hitting some hot spots around the league. So, you know, my sense of it and, you know, again, not being an expert in anything to do with COVID-19, but it looks like Canada, frankly, has done a way better job than the U.S. in terms of keeping things in order up there. So I feel in terms of player safety, the chances are very good. If they can get in the bubble, they'll be in pretty good shape. It's getting there and getting things going. So I don't think we're over the finish line on that yet. But at the same time, I think, you know, when you talk to players, for the most part, I don't think a lot of them are worried about themselves in terms of the health issues as much. And obviously the players that have tested positive, thank God, have not had any serious illnesses, and we hope that that continues to be the case. But, you know, if I'm a young player or any player, I guess, leaving maybe an older player, leaving a family, leaving kids, perhaps living in an area where things aren't in great shape right now, I think that would be the single biggest concern. Being away from family for potentially a couple of months, I think would probably be the number one thing on players' minds at this point for those that are leaving families.
Have we put any thought into it? I mean, this isn't necessarily agent related or player related, but just the game, just related to the game in general, Steve. Like, you start this August 1st qualifying round. Like, and we're not there yet. We're still a ways away, and a lot can happen between now and then. And I've said all along, I've been very skeptical, actually more so doubtful, but, you know, I've always said that I would love to be proven wrong and pleasantly surprised. But, like, how many years are we looking at shifting if you want to call it traditional hockey schedule, how many years do you think it'll take before it's back to normal, if they even care about getting it back to normal, but to a September training camp start date?
Well, I think we're certainly obviously impacted for, you know, finishing this season and then into the, you know, 2021 season. I don't think there's any way, shape, or form that anybody could assume unless they decide they suddenly want to play 50 games, which I don't think is happening. So I think we're at least, a season and a half, if you want to call it that. I think our best chance would be the 21-22 season to get close to normality. It could, you know, it could be a case of with a shorter off season just to kind of reset the clock and get people back on a more normal schedule. Does that mean training camp on October 1st instead of September, 10th or something like that, just to, start to make the transition back without being as radical as it's likely to be here for the next year and a half. But, obviously no one really anticipates that on an ongoing basis it makes sense to be playing both baseball and hockey in July and August. So I think, I think we're looking at 2021 probably running at least into, June. But they can make some tweaks by getting rid of the All-Star game and getting rid of the mandatory week off for players that they've had the last couple of years. And it'll be a tough condensed schedule, and maybe they adjust a little bit of how the travel goes or the inter-conference play or something to do whatever they can to make it a little more logical and easier on the players, but get closer back to that traditional schedule we're all used to.
Well, let me ask you this. When can players start signing with their teams, and when does the traditional, or the new July 1st start?
It sounds like the new July 1st will be November 1st. Obviously, you can't really have free agency until the playoffs are done. They did have some transition dates that were announced yesterday that would affect more the people who are no longer playing, won't play, or when they get knocked out. So in the old days, if you had 1 year left in your contract, you were able to sign an extension beginning July 1st before that last season. So now if you're out of the playoffs, I think they're still going to have that ability to sign an extension 3 days. I believe it's 3 days after this agreement is ratified, assuming that it is. So if I'm a Sabre and I had 1 year left and the Sabres wanted to re-sign me, traditionally we could start talking on July 1st. Obviously, we're past that. So now, instead of July 1st, they're saying 3 days after the ratification of this agreement, then they could start talking. But obviously, if you're still playing, I think they're going to defer that until you've gotten I haven't even read the rules completely. I think that's true of anybody, even if you're still in the playoffs. And there's others that if they get knocked out, would have the ability, say, to sign outside of North America. There's a bunch of rules involving guys that may decide, hey, I want to go play in Switzerland or Russia or whatever, but they have to wait until they're either in the Sabre situation where, they're not going to play, or they're knocked out in terms of the playoff format that we're going to be seeing here in the next few weeks, if indeed it's up and going.
So, Steve, let me ask you this. Is this an advantage for the Sabres, let's say, that they could re-sign Rasmus Dahlin to a long-term deal before hitting free agency? Basically, know what money you would have available for free agency as opposed to have it all being crammed in on November 1st?
Yeah, I think it is. I think there is some planning opportunities for the non-playoff teams. And, since there's a little bit of time for them to do it, I would say it gives them a little advantage. And there may be in these times, there may be a little less inclination for a player to go to the new July 1st, now November 1st, because the economics and the flat cap, it may not be the best time to be an unrestricted free agent. So I would suspect there may be more players that are willing to take a little bit more conservative approach and one in the hand's worth two in the bush type attitude. And I certainly can see that, understand that, and probably advise that in many circumstances. There's going to be exceptions, but quite frankly, this is probably not the traditionally best time to be an unrestricted free agent or push the envelope too awfully hard right now.
Instigators, Steve Bartlett joining us here on the show. We're basically running out of time, man. We've covered everything. Appreciate your time. Have you started Curb Your Enthusiasm yet? Have you restarted it?
No, I've got to get back to it. Highly recommended from you, PD, and I have to admit I used to really enjoy that show, so I've got to
just
fire
start
up
back at season 9 Marty's, is that, who is that, Marty?
It's a secret.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, get back on it, Steve. Season 9, start at season 9. I also predict some reading in your future here too. I got a cover to cover the new CBA.
Oh yeah, we'll definitely have to get ourselves up to speed as usual, but it's a good feeling to at least think that maybe we're moving in the right direction, and we still have some hurdles to go. I agree with you, Petey, that we're not there yet, but hopefully the U.S. can figure out a little bit how to tap this thing down, and we all get ourselves healthy and closer to being back to the lives that we all were pretty happy with.
Well, enjoy yourself, stay healthy, and we'll chat with you real soon. Thanks for your time today, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate you having me on. Take care.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.